It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
You don't hear me singing the blues too much on this show, and there's a reason for that. I mean, I've got arguably the best job in the world chatting with you every week about fishing, hunting, and conservation. However, a little tumble in the woods last week has my life spinning, and not in a good way. I was out on a quick overnight camping trip in the Cascade Mountains with my trusty Springer Spaniel Georgia. Just car camping, nothing fancy, and it was time to call it a night. I put Georgia on a leash so she could do her business one last time, and just a few steps away from the truck, while I'm looking up at the stars above without a care in the world, she bolted. Now, I don't know if she saw a deer, a squirrel, Bigfoot, I don't know, but I know I tumbled to the ground and instantly felt a sharp pain in my left ankle. That sharp pain turned out to be a broken fibula just above the ankle, and I'll be having surgery on Monday where the doctor will use a metal plate and screw to put the bones back in place and keep them there. Recovery time? At least 8 weeks until I can put weight on that foot again. That means goodbye, not only to my long-planned fishing, crabbing, and camping trip next week on Washington's Puget Sound, but also the end of any chance to compete in a mid-September bass tournament or enjoy my annual September fishing trip in the Columbia River Gorge bordering Oregon and Washington at Fish Camp. And worse still, I'm probably going to be out for the opening day of not just quail season, but also duck hunting season and pheasant season in October. Yikes, this got serious in a hurry. Another opener I'm going to miss? The deer hunting opener. And I've got to tell you, I was really looking forward to going out with my new Henry Repeating Arms Long Ranger Lever Action Rifle. I got this great-looking rugged rifle and 6.5 Creedmoor, perfect caliber for the mule deer that roam the region I live in, but heading to the range to get it sighted in, let alone hiking and hunting, all without putting any weight on my left foot, that's going to be in the really tough-to-do category. On the other hand, if you are looking for a quality deer gun this fall in either 6.5 Creedmoor or maybe calibers like 243, 223, or 308, you really need to check out the Long Ranger, made specifically to reach out and touch big game and predators too. Like all of Henry's firearms, they are made in the USA and have a lifetime satisfaction guarantee. You can find out more and find a dealer near you at henryusa.com. If you have any questions, just contact the award-winning customer service staff. And don't forget to ask for your free decals and catalog too. That website again, henryusa.com. This week on America Outdoors Radio, we've got a slate of great guests for you, to include Brian Lovett, who just wrote a state-by-state deer hunting forecast for 2021 at OutdoorLife.com. He'll join us to talk about some of the key trends he has seen as we approach the fall deer season. It's no secret, RVs are all the rage right now, but if you like to get off the pavement and onto the back roads or maybe even the Jeep trails and overland it, you'll want to hear our conversation with Steve McLeod. He's the owner of Forshear Off-Road Trailers out of Springville, Utah. Steve's not only going to tell you about his trailers, but also about the challenges and triumphs he and the rest of the RV industry is facing during the ongoing COVID pandemic. Finally, dove hunting season starts September 1st, and even though I won't be participating this year, we will be joined by someone who is. That would be Edgar Castillo. He's a Kansas-based outdoors writer who loves upland bird hunting, and we'll share a great discussion with you about dove hunting to include some tips that might help you harvest a few more of those birds too. Before we talk deer, RVs, and dove hunting, though, let's break out the rod and reels and talk a little fishing. Next on America Outdoors Radio, let's talk crappie fishing. And I've got a great guy to talk crappie fishing with. That would be Ron Stallings with TTI Blakemore out of Alabama. Ron, great to have you back on the air.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You know, Ron, we are finishing up with the dog days of summer. We're going to be heading into September, where the water is going to start to cool around our United States. The days are going to become shorter. Let's talk about the crappie. Where are they now at the end of the August? And where are they going to be when these things start happening in September?
Well, right now they're mostly in the deeper swells and channels of lakes and rivers, or mostly lakes and non-current rivers. But as time wears on, they're actually going to start foraging really, really hard for spawning season coming up in the winter months. And they're going to be moving up into shallower water and finding that certain thermocline where they can forage really good and really fatten themselves up and start developing the eggs and getting things ready to go. So if they're in 20 feet now by the middle to end of September, depending on where you're at in the United States, they're going to be moving up into that 15 to 12 to 10 depth right there in that thermocline that's specific for them. And they're going to be, like I said, they're going to be foraging. They're going to be building themselves up for eggs and spawning for the winter. So they're going to be transitioning to a little bit shallower water. They're not going to be in deeper water, but they're going to be looking for that certain thermocline. And it's all going to depend on, you know, the water temperature and the location in the United States where you're fishing at. Where you're at is probably going to cool quicker than it is here in Alabama or even Florida or even Texas. So you're probably going to have an earlier staging site in each lake. I would be targeting them in that halfway range, depending on the depth where you're at. So if you're fishing in an area that, like I said, is 20 feet, look for that 15 to 12 to 10 foot area as the months progress, and they'll start staging in there and foraging hard.
You know, this is good news for anglers who don't have a boat because, you know, those depths are reachable, whether you're fishing from the bank or fishing from a dock. Certainly, though, if you have a boat, this works too. Let's talk about tactics. What do you like to do to entice bites this time of year?
Well, during that time, they're going to be foraging mostly on live bait, live minnows, little chubs and things like that, small shiners. And the best thing to do in a boat is a spider rig. And depending on where you're at will depend on how many rods you can put out. Out here in Alabama, we can put out 8 rods and have 4 on one side, 4 on the other, and 2 anglers. But some states don't allow that many, so you'll have maybe 2 or 3 per side. But what you're doing is at the bottom of the line, you'll have a weight. Then above that, you'll have 2 lines that hang off. You put a true turn hook on each end of those lines and just stick a minnow in there and push those minnows into structure. Now, they're going to be foraging around structure a lot. So if you can set your lines up and push your boat and then have it stop and have those lines just slowly flow into that brush, they will attack those minnows and it'll be like a total Chinese fire drill, man, because they'll just go nuts over it.
Let's talk about folks who are using artificial lures. I understand TTI Blakemore. In fact, I don't just understand. I know TTI Blakemore has all sorts of crappie lures. What would you recommend?
Well, depending on the size of the fish and the region where you live at, we have a larger button-tail bodied bait that's called a slab dragger. It has ribs underneath the belly that trap air on the cast and release those bubbles after the cast is set. That's a really, really good bait. Got a lot of sound, a lot of flash, a lot of vibration. The other one we have is called a crappie tamer. And what it has is it's a solid body with a flared tail, but the solid body has huge rings around it. Remember the old ringworms back in the 70s? It looks
right.
Something similar to that. So it holds a lot more air. It has a lot more vibration. It'll hit that frequency that on the lateral line that the fish pick up on. And it's a real good active bait. Now, when you're fishing with those minnows on your line, instead of having a weight down there, you can put a roadrunner down there. So you'll have 3 different areas that fish can hit on.
Nice.
So you can have a roadrunner on the bottom, a minnow above that, and maybe a minnow above that. So you have an option. Now you got to check your local regulations to make sure that you can use that many hooks above any kind of a weight or any kind of a lure. But the crappie tamer and the slab dragger, those are 2 superb lures for crappie.
Well, I'll tell you what, that slab dragger, I am going to check that one out. That sounds like a fantastic option. I love the fact that it's releasing those air bubbles. What an attractant that's going to be.
It's really also, believe it or not, it's a really good walleye lure.
Oh, all right. Well, now you've got me even more excited. So there you go, folks. All sorts of options from TTI Blakemore. And yes, you can find the Roadrunner and these other lures in sporting goods stores all over North America. If you can't for some reason, what's the website folks should go to?
It's TTIBlakemore.com.
That's TTIBlakemore.com for crappie lures. And as you just heard, you now know where those crappie are going to be come September. And now you've got some great ideas on how to catch them too. Thanks as always, Ron.
All right, buddy. Good luck to you out there. And y'all have good fishing and a great, great winter.
We'll be right back. The Dalles in Oregon is your base camp for fishing fun. Reel in big salmon, tangle with steelhead, bass, and walleye, or wrestle a monster sturgeon to the boat. After the day is done, you'll find a variety of lodging options around town. Need to resupply? We've got you covered with sporting goods stores plus great dining, breweries, wineries, and can't-miss attractions like the Gorge Discovery Center. Plan your fishing getaway today at explorethedalles.com. That's explorethedalles.com.
Why book at Sportsman's Cove Lodge?
Why is Alaska like no other place on Earth? It hasn't changed in thousands of years.
From the way you get here on a float plane to the way you go out with the guides and the boats, it's just a professional experience.
And I said, this is as good as it gets. I said, if you can't catch fish here, you can't catch fish anywhere.
Your experience with us will leave you speechless.
Book now at alaskasbestlodge.com.
Hunting and fishing are exercises in hope. Before you head into the woods, you hope to tag out on a deer you'll have to field dress. Before you make that first cast, you hope for a big fish to clean and fillet. When your hopes are realized, you'll need a sharp knife. Whether you sharpen that blade on a power sharpener in the shop or a manual sharpener in the field, WorkSharp has the tool for you. Look for WorkSharp products in sporting goods stores near you or online at WorkSharpTools.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand public access to the outdoors. Our outdoor heritage depends on sportsmen and women like you speaking up for the natural resources that sustain our way of life. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org and become a BHA member today.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. As we transition to September, I know if you're like me, you're starting to think about deer hunting and you're probably wondering how things are going to be this year. That's why you should probably go to OutdoorLife.com and check out the 2021 deer hunting forecast state by state. It's written by Brian Lovett, and we are reaching out to him in his home state of Wisconsin right now to get more details. Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, John. It's great to be here.
Well, this was a great article. I love the state-by-state breakdown. We're not going to be able to go through all 50 states in the next 10 minutes, but I definitely want to hit the highlights. Let's start off with whitetail deer. When it comes to whitetails, how are they doing in terms of, you know, from the Midwest to the East in general? And what are a couple of great states you'd recommend for hunting them?
Well, overall, it sounds pretty good for whitetails this year. In the north, winters haven't been too severe. In the south, of course, some of those southeastern states face some challenges now, and a couple of states, Louisiana and Mississippi, had some flooding issues one or two years ago that impacted the herds at the local level. Overall, it looks like a good year. People are saying production looks really good, and many are expecting increased harvests from last year, actually.
When I think of great places to hunt whitetail deer, I generally think of states like Alabama, Tennessee. Are those still a couple of great choices?
Yeah, they really are. Both those look very good this year. Tennessee in particular, they were pretty optimistic about prospects for this coming fall. Alabama as well. Like I said, they look like they had good production this year, so things are looking up.
Well, let's head west. Different situation out there. The West has been plagued by both drought. It's also been plagued by wildfires, and that's all mule deer country. So what's the outlook for mule deer in some of our western states? And if you were to pick a state in terms of where to hunt mule deer, what would it be?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, some of those states, Arizona, as an example, face some real issues with drought and how that has affected production. I think Nevada also had some challenges there. The overall quality of bucks remains very good in those areas because of active management. If I had to pick a state this year, it looks like Colorado could be up in terms of harvest. They got some much-needed moisture here recently, and they actually, I believe, increased harvest opportunities for this year.
Great to hear. You know, and folks just love to hunt the Centennial State. I lived there for a couple years. It is some beautiful country, that's to be sure. All right, next stop, we're heading north to Alaska. Now, I think everybody knows there's very good hunting up there most years for Sitka blacktail. One thing I didn't know that you pointed out in the article is that there's mule deer in Alaska. I didn't know that. Where are they at, and is there a season for them?
Well, they say some mule deer have been sighted from the eastern interior to the northern southeastern Alaska. I didn't know that either. I thought it was all blacktails, and you really never think about mule deer when it comes to Alaska, but I guess there are some there. You know, in terms of blacktail hunting, the season looks pretty good, really. The populations depend so much on winter severity up there. You know, on Prince William Sound, it looks like they had some winter kill a couple of years ago, but overall, populations look good. And on Kodiak Island, sounds like deer recovering from what was a pretty tough winter a couple of years ago, and overall are kind of on the rebound.
Do you know if you can actually hunt mule deer in Alaska, or are you not allowed to do that yet because they've essentially just been discovered in recent years?
You know, I'm going to have to double check on that. I don't believe there is a season, as I've not seen anything on that. Also, if you anything related to deer hunting Alaska always goes back to blacktails, so I would actually have to look into that.
Actually, Brian, I'm actually looking at the regs right now. It looks like you can harvest mule deer in Alaska. So if you want something different than just those Sitka blacktail, plan a mule deer hunt in the last frontier. You know, it is funny, though, the Sitka blacktail. I mean, it's not a big deer, but there's a lot of guides that make a lot of money offering Sitka blacktail hunts. And I guess it's just the quality of the hunt on those islands in particular of Alaska that draws people to that experience.
Yeah, you know, that's my impression as well. I have a lot of friends who have gone up there and done guided hunts, and again, they're not huge bucks, they're not big deer, but just the scenery and the entire experience, you know, from boating in and just the variety of wildlife that you would see up there makes it kind of a once-in-a-lifetime deal.
Let's turn to the state that, in your opinion, is facing the biggest issues with deer populations and why. And we're covering everything from drought to excessive winters to chronic wasting disease. You know, in terms of red flags, in terms of alarm bells, where are deer really having a hard time this year?
Well, it's tough to pinpoint one state. You know, again, I'd say some of the southeastern states really face some challenges now, especially in terms of fawn recruitment. You know, coyotes are always mentioned as a big culprit, and many studies are backing that up. So I guess in general, some of those southeastern states, coupled with, you know, seasonal flooding in some areas has made it tough there. You know, and it's difficult to say whether we as, you know, deer managers, hunters can do anything to help that, or maybe it's just a cycle of nature that's going to have to work itself out.
So when you're talking the southeastern states, are you particularly talking about Mississippi, Louisiana?
Mississippi, Louisiana, South Carolina had quite a few challenges with fawn recruitment in recent years. Now, this year, the forecast for South Carolina actually looks pretty darn good. And the deer manager there is very optimistic. But yeah, in general, you know, Mississippi, Louisiana, South Carolina, those areas.
So here's the last question. We got to save the best for last. If someone was to reach out to you, Brian Lovett, and say, of all the 50 states, what's the state I need to go to tag out on a buck? What's my best chance? Doesn't have to be a trophy, just want to tag out on a buck. Where are you going to send me and why?
You know, it's really hard for me to get away from the Midwest. I mean, just because their deer populations are so robust, there's a lot of public land, and there's a lot of big deer too. But, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, now there are a lot of hunters in those areas as well. But, you know, with just the amount of public land available and the deer numbers there, it's really tough to get away. Pennsylvania would be another area where there's just so much, you know, state game lands available that, I mean, opportunity would equate to success, in my opinion.
All right. I guess I do have one more question for you, Brian, and that is, where are you going to be hunting this year? Obviously, Wisconsin, that's your home state, but are you going anywhere else, and are you going to be doing it with a bow, a muzzleloader, or a rifle?
Probably around home this year. Yeah, we were just checking trail cameras here this weekend at our little place in southern Wisconsin and seeing what's out there for bucks and trying to get some stands in trees. So I'll be hunting mostly in this area in the southwestern part of the state and perhaps some around home too in the east central area of the state. But this is a beautiful area with lots of good deer around it, and deer numbers are very good. So it's looking forward to it because it begins here in less than a month.
Yes, it does. And getting back to your method of choice, is it a bow, muzzleloader, or rifle?
Well, Yes. I'll probably, we'll start bow hunting here in a few weeks. And I really enjoy doing that just because it's such a low-key, enjoyable hunt. You know, I mean, you can go out for an evening, and even if you don't see any deer, you've had a great experience.
Right.
You know, it's just beautiful time of year to be out and watch the seasons change. You know, gun hunting used to be such a big event here in Wisconsin, more of a social event, and now more people do it kind of as a solo or small group. So that's still a great time of year. It's just the anticipation for it. You know, it's almost, it's a, such a cultural thing here in Wisconsin.
Well, it sounds like you've got a great season ahead. And folks, now you've got some information so that you can have a great season too. If you want to find out more details, definitely go to outdoorlife.com. Check out the 2021 deer hunting forecast. It's state by state, all sorts of information by Brian Lovett. And he writes all sorts of other articles for Outdoor Life too. Brian, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ready to step up to a quality-built rifle or shotgun that's a true classic? Check out Henry Repeating Arms, American-made. There's over 200 models to choose from in a variety of finishes and calibers for hunters and target shooters. Many of these are lever-action models with a look right out of the Old West. Don't be deceived, though. Henry Repeating Arms are modern, rugged, accurate, reliable, and have a lifetime guarantee. Find out more and order a free catalog today at henryusa.com. That's henryusa.com.
Why book at Sportsman's Cove Lodge?
Why is Alaska like no other place on earth? It hasn't changed in thousands of years.
From the way you get here on a float plane to the way you go out with the guides and the boats, it's just a professional experience.
And I said, this is as good as it gets. I said, if you can't catch fish here, you can't catch fish anywhere.
Your experience with us will leave you speechless.
Book now at alaskasbestlodge.com.
Welcome back to America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Our next stop is Springville, Utah. That's the home of Borshear Off-Road Trailers, and we've got the owner on the line, Steve McLeod. Steve, welcome to the show.
How are you doing?
I am doing great. Really want to talk about your very new company, founded in 2018, and boy, talk about good timing, because RVs and trailers, their use is going through the roof right now as we deal with this COVID pandemic and people want to get outside. Before we get into your product line, I want to talk about your company and your trailers. All of your trailers are made in America, and I guess I just assume that most RVs and trailers were made in America. Is that not true?
It's about a 50% true. Some of the bigger manufacturers that we're seeing, we're actually seeing a lot of trailers that are being manufactured in China and imported. And then some of the better ones are made in Australia and imported, and then there's a few from South Africa. We're one of the few larger companies that sticks to the made in America, though.
I had no idea, and that's why we have folks like you on the show. All right, the next question I have for you is, you make these small, rugged trailers. A lot of them can be towed by very small vehicles, in one case, even a motorcycle. What separates an off-road trailer from a standard trailer that you haul behind your car or truck?
So an off-road trailer is going to have a smaller footprint. It's going to be far more compact. It's going to be lighter in weight. It's typically going to have some form of an independent suspension for superior ground clearance. You know, typically sit quite a bit higher. And then you're not going to have the, you know, the large cabin living spaces that you would have, you know, in your traditional big bumper poles and fifth wheels. You're usually going to have a small little sleeping space, some sort of a galley, a fridge, freezer, just the basics. And for the most part, you're going to be in the outdoors. You're not going to be living in the trailer.
Gotcha. You know, this is fine. I mean, it used to be, this is why you got a pickup truck and went truck camping, but not everybody has a pickup truck. And even if you do, you might want something like your Extreme Expedition rig. I really like this. Why don't you tell our folks a little bit more about it?
So our Extreme Expedition rig, we call it the XER, it was designed to be lightweight, to be pulled behind Jeeps and side-by-sides in particular, or any small vehicle. It does not have an interior sleeping quarters, but it does have a rooftop tent. It's got a 180 or 270 awning. It does have a full galley, sink, stove, fridge, freezer that rolls out of the back. And it was purposely designed just to haul your camping gear and be able to put behind a side-by-side or a Jeep or, you know, even a Subaru could pull one. And it's just to take the basic amenities that you would want to go camping, but, you know, you're not going to have the camper.
Well, if you do want the camper, you do have something for that. The Extreme Overland Camper. I really like the design of this. And there's also, well, for lack of a better word, a deluxe model too, isn't there?
Yes. So the XOC actually has a full queen-size bed in it, so 60 inches wide, 80 inches long. So, you know, tall people like myself, I'm about 6'2", we fit very comfortably in it. And then once again, it can come outfitted with a rooftop tent, awning, has a full galley, hot water, water tank. They're quite nice, and the weight is low enough, once again, that you can pull those with the Jeep as well. Those are pretty popular with the Jeep market as well as the Toyota market.
What is the weight of the XOC, and exactly how long is it?
So the XOC, weight-wise, is 2,600 pounds. That's not loaded. That depends. So you could put as much gear in it as you want. It can hold up to 5,200 pounds total. And the length of it with the spare tire swing is 16 feet.
You know, and this sounds perfect for, you know, I mean, again, we're talking overland here. So we're talking Jeep trails. We're talking dirt trails. I mean, we're not talking paved roads here. This sounds like a great way to explore the backcountry, whether it be remote Forest Service land or whether it be some of that big BLM country that we have out in the West. Now, one other thing I want to talk about, this one is made for the road and it's really lightweight. So lightweight, a motorcycle can tow it, is the XRT, the Extreme Road Tourer. Tell our listeners about this.
So this trailer was specifically designed for trikes and bikes. It has a curb weight of about 500 pounds. It runs on 7-inch braking axles. It's got a full-size bed in it. It has a basic galley with a stove. But for purposes of keeping weight down, it does not have a water tank and sink and fridge and freezer. But it's all aluminum construction, aluminum frame, aluminum body, and it's a simple 1 7/8 tow ball. So if your bike's outfitted with a hitch, you can pull it with your motorcycle or your trike, or once again, you can take it with the side-by-side as well.
You're listening to America Outdoors Radio. We're talking to Steve McLeod. He is the owner of Vorsheer Off-Road Trailers out of Springville, Utah. And I think you found a real niche here. I really like this niche that you're filling. Again, you're a young company. You just founded this in 2018. What do your sales look like already?
Sales have really, they've been quite crazy, actually, especially since COVID. I think with a lot of lockdowns, a lot of people were turning more to the outdoors. You know, they couldn't go to the movie theaters and couldn't do the things that they were typically used to doing. And so the outdoors became a pretty good alternative. And we saw a substantial increase in sales last year. And the only thing we can really figure is it's due to COVID-19.
Here's the next question. I know that a lot of RV lots are empty. You hear commercials not saying we've got RVs for sale, but saying please give us your RV so we can sell it. And I guess that gets back to availability. There's just so much demand, number one. Number two, manufacturing, especially for those overseas, they're not getting here. How are you doing in terms of keeping up with demand? And what's the availability of your trailers? If I was to order one now, how long would it be till I could actually get one in my driveway?
Well, we're constantly delivering out to our dealers. I don't know that you'd need to order one. We do have some in various dealers around the western states currently. We've got 14 dealers, and those dealers can be located on our dealer locator on our website at www.vorsheer.com. Demand, we're like everybody else, we're struggling. We're trying to find parts and keep production up as best we can, but we're managing to send trailers, ship trailers weekly. So if you wanted to pick one up, you could, within reason, have one within a week or two, I would imagine.
What are the hardest things to find? I mean, I know, for example, when it comes to vehicles and outboard engines, it's these computer chips that are made in China. That's the big holdup. Obviously, you're not dealing with that necessarily when you're talking about an off-road trailer. What are the struggles in terms of things you're having a hard time finding?
So our biggest struggle has been raw goods, so aluminum, steel, and wood. Mainly because of the price increases that we've seen.
Sure.
Trying to keep the trailer prices reasonable, and we're seeing some prices increase as much as 67%. That's really been the trick. We've been through a couple of stages this year where we just simply couldn't get aluminum for whatever reasons. It just wasn't available, couldn't get it. So that was a bit of a struggle for us. And Everybody knows about the wood crisis. Wood became a problem there for a little while. And so you just, as we say around Vorshire, you hit the phones, you work the problem, and you solve it. You figure out what you can get done, and you try to get the trailers out.
I love the attitude. Absolutely love the attitude. Is the supply chain becoming a little less unclogged? Are things looking better as we head towards the fall of 2021?
You know, it's up and down. It has its moments where we kind of breathe and think, oh, you know, maybe it's behind us. And then we get an email or we get a phone call that something's being held up.
Right.
And so, you know, as I say, we hit the phones and we work the problem. I would say across the board, though, it's actually got substantially better as
Good.
This year has progressed. And all we can do is hope that it continues to get better.
All right. Actually, one last question for you, Steve. What's the price point in terms of the low end versus the high end? I'm not looking for exact numbers, but give or take, how much are we looking at for one of these off-road trailers or the Extreme Road Tour?
So you're going to start as low as about $13,000 on the XRT model, and then getting into a fully loaded XOC model, which is kind of our flagship model. You can easily break into the $50,000 range on that one, depending on options and accessories, amenities that you choose to have put on the trailer at the dealership.
Okay. Well, folks, if you want to really get into the backcountry and live in it and camp in it in style, I really think you should check out Vorshire Off-Road Trailers. The website to go to is vorshire.com. That's V-O-R-S-H-E-E-R, vorshire.com. Check out their lineup. Check out where the dealers are and order one. Like you heard, you can get one a lot sooner than you think. Steve, congratulations on doing a great job with the new company, and thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Thank you.
This portion of the show was brought to you by our friends at WorkSharp. They're the fine folks out of Ashland, Oregon, who make knife and tool sharpeners that you can use whether you're hunting or fishing or camping or maybe in your shop, maybe in your kitchen, for all of the knives and tools you need sharpened every day when you work and play. WorkSharp tools can be found online at WorkSharpTools.com or you can find them in sporting goods stores and hardware stores all over our great nation. Just look for WorkSharp products to sharpen your knives and your tools, because nothing is worse than trying to get the job done right with a dull blade.
This is the time of year to get out and cook out. So make your next meal sizzle with Camp Chef, the brand known for quality outdoor cooking. From camp stove to cast iron, from smokers to grills, Camp Chef will change the way you cook outdoors. To eat like a king on your next adventure, go to campchef.com or visit your local sporting goods store and get cooking. Whether you're serving breakfast in the backcountry or barbecue on the back patio, savor the simplicity with Camp Chef. Camp Chef, the way to cook outdoors.
We love our children. We protect them. We guide them. We prepare them for life in the world. With all that we do, from deep in our hearts, we cannot control all things. Life-threatening illnesses and disabilities affect far too many of our children each year. While we cannot change the circumstance, we can make dreams come true. Dreams to provide hope, to provide spiritual healing and strength, to provide moments of happiness and relief in the hardest of times. We can give a glimmer of light and hope in a time of darkness and despair. Join huntofalifetime.org to help make dreams come true, to provide hope for children with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Hunt of a Lifetime is a nonprofit organization fulfilling dreams for hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Visit huntofalifetime.org to learn how you can make a difference.
Hey, how'd the meeting go with Tommy's school counselor today?
Well, not exactly as planned. I think we need help.
Help? Why do we need help?
Well, I asked her about paying for college, and she said that's not something they do.
Maybe it is time to get some help. Even if Tommy just goes to state college, it's going to cost at least $25,000 a year. We'll have to raid our retirement and pay for Tommy's tuition. There's got to be a better way.
There is a better way. A way where you can pay less for college, or even receive college tuition free, regardless of your income or your students' grades. A way for you to keep your hard-earned income and savings for your future and spend less on college while virtually eliminating the need for student loans. Get the facts about college admissions and tuition by going to tuitionprograms.org. That's tuitionprograms.org. tuitionprograms.org. Get the facts about college admissions and tuition by going to tuitionprograms.org.
Yes, you are back in with America Outdoors Radio, and September 1st is a special day for a lot of us because in many states across the nation, it's the opening of dove hunting season. If you've never been dove hunting before, it's one of the funnest hunts you're ever going to enjoy. With us here to tell you a little bit more about the fun he has dove hunting is Edgar Castillo. He wrote a great article for Project Upland about a year ago called The Complete Guide to Dove Hunting. Writes lots of other articles and blog posts too. You can find some of them on his Facebook page at Hunt Birds, that's B-I-R-D-Z, or follow him on Instagram at Hunt_Birds. Edgar, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you very much for having me as a guest, and hopefully I can provide you and the listeners some good information as well as a story or two.
Well, and I just want to talk dove hunting. You know, the differences between dove hunting and other types of hunting like duck hunting are just so polar opposite. Duck hunting, everyone's so competitive. If anyone's within 200 yards of your blind, you're getting annoyed with them. But with dove hunting, it's kind of like, hey, pull up a bucket, have a seat next to me. Let's go ahead and chew the fat and let's shoot some birds. Let's talk about how you got into dove hunting and what you love about it.
Well, first off, I agree with you. Dove hunting is a lot different. I think it's more of a social affair. You know, it's not a time to be quiet. I mean, at least when I go, it's a lot of hooting and hollering and, hey, there's a bird behind you and above you and a lot of shooting. But I started off, I think, just like almost everyone else did. My father brought me along to go with him when he was dove hunting when we first came to the United States. Duck hunting was his first introduction, and then dove hunting followed soon afterwards. And so I tagged along as an 11-year-old boy watching my dad and listening to him on, you know, what to do.
You know, I live in eastern Washington, and the dove opener out here, generally speaking, you're looking for grain fields, especially cut grain fields. And if you can set up, you know, along the route to and from those fields, you're usually in for good shooting. You're in Kansas. What does dove hunting look like there?
Pretty much the same thing. I mean, it's a lot of, a lot of people hunt private and public. I'm a big public land guy, so I naturally gravitate towards looking for public fields that have been set up by the state, you know, sunflower fields, bean fields, corn fields, you know, any area where there's habitat where the doves are going to be looking forward to, you know, get a bite to eat, as well as looking for some water nearby. And I do a lot of scouting preseason. You know, I'm looking for flight paths and the lay of the land and which way they're coming in and which way they're coming out, the times of day, and looking for a good place to set up once opening day arrives.
You know, Edgar, that is so smart, that preseason scouting, because I've been burned on this several times when I've been lazy and just figured, well, I'll go to where I go last year, but the field might not be in grain. It might not be cut. It could have turned into CRP. Like you said, the birds could be doing something completely different in terms of time of day, or maybe they've even already migrated from the area depending on the weather. So that preseason scouting is so smart indeed. Question for you. Over here in the Northwest, we are actually seeing a decrease in mourning dove numbers. My personal theory is that it has to do with a huge increase in an invasive species called the Eurasian collared dove, which looks like a mourning dove on steroids, and I really think it's just out-competing them. Are you seeing the same situation in the Midwest?
Personally, no. At least here where I'm at in the Kansas City metro area where we dove hunt typically throughout the dove season, I've never run in across any Eurasian doves or even white wings. However, as the regular upland bird season progresses, when we're out farther west in Kansas and central Kansas, we have on occasion quite frequently come across Eurasians, and more so in the southwest portion of the state. However, I have talked to several people saying that they are seeing an increase in numbers, but I haven't witnessed any of that, so I couldn't really tell you if they're actually pushing out the mourning dove, but at least not here in the Kansas City metro area.
Well, maybe I need to come hunting with you in Kansas this year. Let's talk about something else here. You know, a lot of folks, I think this is very typical. I'd probably say 90% of dove hunters, they hunt the opener, maybe the morning after the opener, and they see that the birds have wisened up already, and they're done for the year. Do you hunt after the opener? Are we missing out by not doing that?
Oh, yes, of course. It's funny because there's a lot of people will come out for the opener a day or two, maybe even a third day. And then once the birds get pushed out, either through, you know, weather change, cold front coming in, or just, you know, the birds getting wary enough that they're not going to be decoying in, or that, you know, they're seeing a spot that's pressured, they move on, and the hunters do as well. I hunt as long as I can. I mean, I know and understand that there's not going to be as many birds as there were in the beginning of the season, but a lot of that goes back to scouting. I've found places 3 weeks out after the opener, and it's just like opening day, but it's because those birds have come back or they're passing through, they're migrating south, and it's just like a whole nother opener.
Last question for you. You are a pretty prolific writer. Any articles, blogs, or projects we should be aware of in your world?
I've got a few coming out. I should have one or two coming out for Project Upland, another dove, I guess, how-to or tip style article, just on some tactics that my father has passed on to me and that I use. And not to say that they're perfect by any means, but definitely something to at least look into and try. And I've got a couple articles and stories coming out for some various outlets, Strong Magazine, Filson, and the Project Upland actual magazine. I've got a story coming out there on Arizona quail.
Can't wait to read all of those. Dove decoys, are you a believer or not?
Oh, yes, definitely. The Mojo or any kind of motorized dove decoy. And I've even used teal decoys in a pinch. They work really well. I would say one other tactic that I use a lot, and I think a lot of people don't, is I like to walk up dove. I think it's an underused tactic. And when it gets slow and still, I leave where I'm at, go walking around and flush them up like that, and then come back about 20 minutes later, let them settle back down, and then I just repeat the same thing over and over again all day long, and I typically do very well, and most of the time I come home with a limit.
You know, it's funny you say that. I have done the exact same thing for years. You know, you do pass shooting in the morning, then you go to where those birds are hunkering down, and you're right. It's almost like quail hunting, except it's dove hunting, and it's an absolute ton of fun and a way to get that limit if you didn't in the morning. So we have got to go, but Edgar, really enjoyed talking dove hunting with you. Can't wait to read some of the great articles and other things that you're putting out. And again, folks, if you want to do the same, go to his Facebook page at Hunt Birds. That's Hunt B-I-R-D. Or follow him on Instagram at @hunt_birds. That's Edgar Castillo. He's a busy man who loves to hunt upland birds. Thanks so much, Edgar, for spending time with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Thank you. Have a good day.
And now it's time for one of my favorite segments.
It's time to talk record fish.
This week's record fish comes out of Sleepy Hollow Lake. I love the name of that lake, by the way, in New York State. The fish, a 4.42-pound crappie. The angler, 62-year-old Albany resident Roy Isaac. Roy's been fishing this lake as of late off his friend's dock and catching bigger and bigger crappie along the way, starting with a very respectable 1.7-pound fish, then a really nice 2-pound, 10-ounce crappie, followed by a monster 3-pound, 10-ounce crappie, but all of those paled in comparison to the 4-plus-pound crappie that Roy reeled in on August 21st that he initially thought was a bass. Roy caught this crappie using a live minnow as bait, fishing it about 25 feet deep. That is quite a fish, Roy Isaac, so big that it breaks the state record not only for black crappie, but also for white crappie, too. Way to go.
Congratulations on your new record.
As we wrap things up, I'd like to congratulate Randy Roman from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for winning that Daredevil Lure package we gave away last weekend on the show through our Facebook page at America Outdoors Radio. I suspect those lures will come in handy up in the Great Lakes for steelhead, trout, and more. By the way, we'll be having another giveaway much sooner than later, so if you haven't yet liked and followed our Facebook page, just go to America Outdoors Radio on Facebook and do so. You will be in the know about our next giveaway, so you can get a chance to win too. Let's see, what else? Oh yes, a programming note to share. Because of that darn broken leg of mine just above the ankle, I'll be in for surgery this coming week, and while listening to an edition of America Outdoors Radio with your host hopped up on pain meds might sound interesting, I'm not going to do that to you, and I'm not going to do that to myself. So, you'll be enjoying a best of edition next week, but don't worry, I promise it's going to be a show you're truly going to enjoy. It is time to go, but here is hoping you are blessed in the days ahead, that you stay healthy, and as we roll into the big Labor Day weekend, that you make plans to make the most of the unofficial end of summer. After all, it is your country and you're outdoors, so get out there and enjoy it.